I know I'm going number one.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_Bieber. We are back to do another 2018 NBA draft preview. You heard our earlier show, well, hopefully you heard our earlier show with Cole Zwicker. So if you haven't, make sure you're checking that one out. And now we're going to be covering a bunch of other prospects that we didn't get to with Cole. And we're going to be doing that today with Sam Vecenie. Sam, normally I'd have some sort of interesting AFL quip to introduce you with, but unfortunately both of our teams are currently sucking in the AFL.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been a hard year to be an Essendon fan. It's picking up a little bit. I mean, I think they've won 3 of 4, and I'm no longer just like sitting in a basket of tears over Jake Stringer and Adam Saad not performing, but it's still been kind of a rough year, and now they have to play West Coast in 2 weeks. It's not going to go well.
Well, one thing that I'm happy about as a Bulldog supporter is the fact that we beat Essendon, so that was one of our four victories for the year. But just speaking of Jake Stringer, have you seen his stomach tattoo? It's something.
I've seen, like, is it a whole stomach tattoo or is it like a shoulder tattoo? I know he's is it the same tattoo?
So he's got like on his stomach around his belly button a lion face. And then he's had an extra bit added on with these like purple eagle wings that go up towards his shoulder. It's it's a look. Probably isn't something I want to rock as I was as I'm walking around shirtless. It's definitely something. But now that you guys have got him, you can deal with all the stomach tattoos that you can handle over there at Essendon. But that's enough of our AFL discussion, Sam. We're going to be talking NBA draft because we are a week and a few days away from the 2018 NBA draft. And this is a draft. Last year's draft class was stacked. We've seen the results from these guys, even in their first year. You know, fantastic performances. This year has a huge amount of talent as well. It seems to be distributed differently. Last year, we had tons of point guards going early. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily the case this year. And I was talking with Cole earlier about this, Sam. Is it last year we had all these guards go early, and then there was this weird situation between say 14 and 25 where there was a lot of big men, but it seems to be flipped this way this year with all the big men going early, and then there's all these guards and wings that seem to be available later in the first round.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think it's kind of the exact opposite of last year, where I think five of the first nine picks really were point guards. And then you throw Donovan Mitchell in, who went 13 as well, who played a good amount of point guard this year, too. This year, really, you're talking Trae Young and Colin Sexton at the point guard position. Depending on what you think of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I really like him. But I really like him because I think he's multi-positional. I don't really think he's like a true point guard. And then after that, you know, you get into a range where I think there are a lot of really interesting combo-y, you know, potential lead guards in the 20 to 40 range, like Eliakobo and Jerome Robinson. And you might even be able to run Shake Milton out there at point occasionally, and Aaron Holiday, and DeAnthony Melton is really good. But there aren't as many sure things, or quote unquote sure things, as you would find in a normal NBA draft at the point guard position. It might run a little bit deep, but it's not a crazy position. And then you contrast that with the big men, and you know, you're talking five of the top six players in this draft class for me have a standing reach over 9 feet. So it's really going to be a very impressive class in terms of the talent that enters the league, both at the four and the five positions.
Interesting. Yeah, we talk about these big men, but we saw through the NBA playoffs that, you know, there were struggles with some of these big men to be able to stay on the court or mm-hmm. to be impactful. And I think that's where a lot of my question marks go over the top of these drafts. These guys who are impressive. And we'll start with the guy who you've had number one pretty much all season. And it looks like he is going to go with the number one pick in this NBA draft. And of course, that's DeAndre Ayton out of Arizona, who's put up, you know, fantastic numbers during his time at Arizona, we all know how, you know, how glistening his biceps look. We all know how large his lats are. He looks the part, but there are still concerns to me anyway, Sam, and maybe you can allay my fears here, that his, I don't know if the right word is lack of interest or anticipation on defense is going to see those offensive talents, which a lot of the time the offensive talents he's had aren't necessarily the thing that's most highly valued in the NBA. Is that going to limit his overall upside, or are you just so enamored by the physical skill set that those things can come along afterwards?
Yeah, I think that it is a combination of the fact that I am enamored by the physical traits and think he is probably the most like impressive physical specimen to enter the NBA since LeBron. And like, I don't say that lightly. Like, I know what I'm saying when I say that, but this dude is 7'1", 260 pounds, has like a 40 plus inch vertical leap, moves his feet incredibly well on both ends of the floor. I mean, in terms of footwork and like moving his feet in small spaces, he's not Joel Embiid necessarily, but he's quicker than Joel. It's not necessarily as fluid, but it's a little bit more quick twitch than what Joel has. And you know, I look at him and like there's this weird discussion that I'm writing about for tomorrow or for either Wednesday or Thursday on The Athletic, and about his defense. And I mean, I live out here on the West Coast. I saw him a lot this year. I've talked to a lot of Pac-12 coaches, and they all think he's like an incredible defender. They all think he's like an absolutely awesome defender, and there are no concerns about that. But you look at some of the NBA projections, and I do understand where people are concerned about the defense. I do think that there are times where he rotates late and doesn't get into position quite as quickly. I would just caution everyone on like making grand assessments on that for a 19-year-old, just because he is still at such a young stage of his development. It does tend to take big men a little bit longer to get down just the little nitty gritty details of defense. You know, in terms of being a perimeter defender as well, he's already got everything he needs to be a good perimeter defender. Again, he slides his feet really well. He gets down into a stance. Arizona guarded ball screens with hard hedges and recovery scenarios. They often involve Dušan Ristić, but when they did involve Ayton, Ayton is very, very good at hard hedging, creating an impediment for the ball handler and then recovering out onto stretch four types that he had to guard. I got to be honest, like, I think he's going to be fine defensively. I really do. I understand where people are coming from with it, but I do think he's going to be like a, you know, maybe not an all NBA level defender, but I think he's going to be like a plus.
His block rate and steal rate in college aren't high, especially the steal rate's really low. Now, we can talk plenty about Arizona's system, which is a contributing factor there. He played out of position, even though he did state that he did want to play at the four, which seems nonsense to me that he'll do that in the NBA because he won't. He'll play at the five. But a couple of guys, high picks out of Arizona, Aaron Gordon and Lauri Markkanen, had those same sort of low steal, low block rates. But it hasn't really improved much for either of those guys in the NBA. It's not like they've said, oh, now we're in a different scheme and look, now we're blocking shots at this massive rate and we're getting steals. Gordon's improved a bit, but it hasn't become to a very good level or anything like that. So what about Ayton and the scheme restricting him? Will see him be able to buck that trend of those couple of guys? Or is there an example of a guy from Arizona who I'm missing who's gone to the NBA and those numbers have sort of become what they can become as a player rather than just sort of moving forward from what they were in college and not showing much scheme differentiation?
Yeah, no, I think that that's a pretty accurate assessment. So the scheme that Arizona runs in general, for background on it, is they run a pack line defensive scheme where it's pretty help heavy. It's very conservative by nature. You're not talking about, you know, guys who are going to, you know, try and break out into passing lanes and really go out of position to try and make plays happen. You know, a guy, for instance, in Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, who was regarded basically from the moment he got on Arizona's campus as an elite defender, he only had a 1.8 steal rate as a freshman. It did improve by the time he got to a sophomore level, but like, you're not talking about a guy who was even in the top 500, I think, of his, you know, class whenever he was at Arizona, and he's become a good defender at the NBA level. You know, his block rate was pretty solid, but it wasn't anything out of like the crazy question, right? Like, he's a combo forward who does some things. I mean, again, 2.4 steal rate as a sophomore was not even in the top 500 guys of his class that year, or of the college basketball season, I guess, that year. So I just kind of caution people on, you know, using these stats as indicators to represent the whole. I think they're certainly useful and they're certainly valuable, but you have to contextualize them in a pretty substantial manner. And like, I would also look at someone like TJ McConnell too.
Yep.
TJ is someone who really improved as a defender over the time at Arizona. Always a try hard kind of guy. Certainly did get steals, but it's a little bit easier to do that at the point of attack than it is coming up from the wings and coming up from the back line of that scheme. So I think it's going to be fine once he gets to the NBA. Like, I just think that there are too many contextual factors that kind of work against that to make me think he'll be something of a negative defensively.
Interesting. I was just looking up Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's steal and block percentage. His steal rate in college is the same as it's been through his 3 years in the NBA, and his block rate has actually dropped in the NBA from his college numbers, which is not something that was, I guess that's a positional thing with the block rate there as well. So look, it's going to be interesting with Ayton. He's not a guy that projects to be the best guy in terms of fantasy in this group coming out. I think that Jaren Jackson and Luka Doncic have that upside there just with the way their stats play up, but Ayton probably has the highest upside of anyone in this draft in terms of being a 20-point per game scorer. Do you think that's an accurate assessment?
I think so. Yeah, unless you like are a wild believer in Trae Young and Michael Porter, I think that you can maybe make the case that those two guys, their ceiling, if they were to like have every single thing break right in their development, Michael Porter could become a 26-point a game scorer, and you know, guy who gets 10 rebounds a night, blocks a shot, gets a steal, kind of does everything to really fill the box score. And then Trae Young, you know, could be a guy that makes you 253s in a season and averages 20 and 10 and, you know, kind of brings you everything but the defensive numbers. But I think DeAndre is just the safest bet more than anything. I mean, the guy's physical tools are outstanding. He can knock down threes. He's going to be efficient as a scorer inside. He is, I think, someone who probably will get right around a block and a half a game, 2 blocks a game still, even at the NBA level. Because, again, he averaged 2 blocks a game playing basically the 4 in college. So I think you can kind of assume that he'll be around the basket a little bit more in the NBA. I'm just a big fan of his game. I think that everything in terms of his physical tools are really going to play up.
He's definitely going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. Obviously, the upside is there with him massively. Let's talk about another guy who you are pretty high on, and that is Marvin Bagley. This draft is interesting. There's no clear-cut number one, in my opinion. There's no clear-cut even 2 or 3. There's this groups of guys, like there's 5 guys or 6 guys or 7 guys who you can make arguments for in many different directions. So with Bagley, I guess the major thing that we're hearing about him is the one-sidedness on offense, just always going to the left, and the defensive concerns, the poor rim protection that he currently shows. So you've got him at number 3 on your current mock draft over at the Athletic Fieldhouse, which everyone should be checking out and subscribing to the Athletic, of course. So what do you see his ability, like in terms of the defensive deficiencies that we've seen from him, is that something that's going to limit what he can do on the court in the NBA? Or are you just so enamored with his offensive upside here?
Yeah, I think that a lot of this is that I think people are overthinking him in a lot of ways. He was 18 years old at Duke and averaged 21 points and 11 rebounds and hit almost 40% from 3 and 62% from the field or whatever. Like, that stuff plays at any level, in my opinion, especially when you're as elite an athlete as Marvin Bagley is. I mean, this guy is like a 99th percentile athlete in terms of quick twitch athleticism, leaping ability, quickness, everything that you're looking for. He's got it from that perspective. I do think there is something to be said, though, for his defensive acumen and for his defensive instincts not being there. This is a guy who, over the course of his career, you just look at what his development cycle has been. I mean, he's coached by his father for like 3 years coming into the college game. And then he went to Duke, which Duke is not a great defensive program by any stretch of the imagination. They actually had to end up playing zone this year, so they didn't really even work with his defensive deficiencies in man-to-man by the time February rolled around. So I'm a little bit worried about it, but I think that it has potential to go the other way as well, where his physical tools in terms of his leaping ability, in terms of his ability to stick with guys on the perimeter athletically, could end up playing up once he actually gets with a coaching staff who learns how to teach fundamentals and teach technique in terms of sliding on the perimeter and in terms of reacting from the weak side.
He had a really poor assist percentage in college as well. Is that a scheme thing? Do you think it's unwillingness to distribute the ball? Is it a vision thing, or is it something that can be improved as he goes? We've seen guys, you know, like Blake Griffin be able to improve that playmaking in pretty much every season in the NBA. Has Bagley got that in him?
Yeah, I think the Blake comp is a pretty interesting one. I think an Amari Stoudemire is an interesting comp as well. Again, you notice those two guys, not necessarily elite level defenders, but they kept adding to their offensive game because they had just this incredible motor and athleticism that overwhelmed everything offensively. In terms of his passing ability, there are flashes. If you go back and watch games, there are actually times where he showed the ability to take short roll passes and pass on the move a little bit. He was pretty good in handoff situations. He was good at playing high-low games with Wendell Carter as well. I think he's going to be okay there from the early part of his career. It was just more of a scheme thing this year where he was basically Duke's finisher this year. I mean, he was what, like 25 points and 13 rebounds per 40 minutes. Yep. His role this year was just someone that finished plays more than created plays for others, because they had Trayvon Duval, they had Grayson Allen, both of whom handled the ball and handled initiation a lot. Wendell Carter was a really good passer as well from the big position. So, yeah, no, I think that he'll be fine once he gets to the NBA. He might not be an elite passer, but I think he'll be okay.
One last thing on Bagley. Looking at his shooting percentages, they're relatively confusing. He shot almost 65% on his two-pointers. And a lower free throw percentage than he did on his 2-point attempts. Now, we saw someone by the name of Lonzo Ball do something very similar last season, not comparing the two guys. But then he also shot 40% on threes. Again, very Lonzo Ball percentage split-wise. Now, he didn't take very many threes, only 13%. So what is he? Is he a guy that can knock down the shots? Is he just a high percentage finisher? I don't really know how to gauge these numbers.
Yeah, I would say that he's a rhythm shooter right now. Needs to kind of be on the move, needs to be able to step in to a jump shot right now for it to be effective. He has a situation where his release point gets a little bit inconsistent and the ball flattens out on him in terms of his arc. Whenever he gets any sort of arc under the ball and gets air under the ball, it tends to be fine. He tends to be a really good jump shooter. And I think that as he continues to mature as a shooter and scorer and continues to just put more work and more reps into that shot, it's going to be fine again. I'm not thinking you're going to be talking about a 40% three-point shooter like he was this year, but I think he's probably going to be something like a, 35% Draymond Greenish, guy who can step out, and you at least have to respect him a decent amount of the time out there.
Mo Bamba is a guy who's getting a lot of buzz at the moment. Yeah, and I think a large part of that is just to do with how polished he is, how much of a good guy he seems, how smart he seems, which is definitely not something to discount at all, because, players with this sort of, I don't know the right word, it's not good-naturedness, but really smart, intelligent, switched on, diplomatic type players. That can be important in locker rooms and in terms of team chemistry as well. But he's also got, combine record standing reach, just a huge man. And we're seeing the improvements in his shot mechanics over this off-season workout period. Now, Bumba, if you're drafting him, I guess you're drafting him for his defensive ability, but are you seeing the offensive upside here with him as well that could, you know, move him into the elite prospect type category?
Yeah, what I will say with Bamba is that I think that the jump shot mechanical change that you've seen in, you know, some of the pre-draft videos and some of his pre-draft workouts, I do think that's real. I think that the fact that he's lowered his shooting pocket, the fact that he's getting the ball out a lot quicker, those are things that are going to stick because his trainer, Drew Hanlon, is a remarkable, remarkable trainer, and he's very, very good at drilling guys into good positions for their success long term. And I think it's just a more natural shooting motion that I think is going to work for him long term. The rest of the offensive game does scare me a little bit because he's very skinny. He certainly has, toned up a little bit and looks to have maybe put on a little bit more weight as well throughout the pre-draft process. But I don't think he's going to be a guy that's ever going to really hold down like the block and really going to be able to establish position just because his center of gravity is so high because his limbs are so long. And then you also look at the fact that he really needs to learn how to become a better screener. This year at Texas, he really didn't ever make a crazy amount of impact on screens, didn't really ever make the contact that you're looking for on a point guard whenever he's coming around a screen, coming off your shoulder. He was more of a slip guy, more of a impatient screener who would make his move to roll to the basket a little bit too quickly. And that's something he needs to get better at because that's one of the best ways for him to create separation as an NBA player and to get his shot off. The other thing that scares me a little bit with Bamba is the passing ability. 3.6 assist rate,
yeah, it's terrible.
I believe.
Yep, it's terrible.
Yeah, I think that might be the worst in the draft among like big guys that are really even draftable prospects this year. He's not natural as a playmaker for others. He's a pure play finisher. And that's okay, but you're not going to be able to do any of the short roll things. You're not going to be able to it limits your offense a little bit in terms of the actions that you're going to put him through.
His assist to turnover ratio is like 0.3 or something like that. He had a 12% turnover rate and a 3.5% assist rate, which is astronomically bad. Now, in terms of his fantasy value, it's all going to come from the blocks and the rebounding ability, but yeah, low assists, low steals, the scoring and the usage is not all that high. So he can really fit in those areas and blocks become really valuable, but there are many things that need to fall into place for him to become an elite type prospect, but he can still have big value. And I mentioned this on the podcast with Cole earlier, is that even a guy last season in the NBA like Jared Allen, in only 22, 23 minutes, he was able to be an impactful fantasy guy just because of the field goal percentage, rebounding, blocks, just those three things at a high rate. And that's what Bamba could potentially be able to do. So that's what you're looking at. But those other areas, as you mentioned, we're a long way from those being impactful. Now, Sam, Michael Porter Jr. is an interesting one. We have seen many players over the past few years be the number one high school prospect and then suffer injuries or weird drop-offs in form. And it doesn't necessarily always translate to good stuff in the NBA. Dennis Smith was out for a time, ACL injury. Harry Giles, who knows what the hell is going to go on with him. Skel Labissiere just dropped off completely in his time in Kentucky and hasn't really shown much to show that the Kentucky stuff was an outlier while he's been in Sacramento. And Porter played those couple of games for Missouri this season, but it's really hard to get a full grasp on him. The concerns that people are showing with Porter at the moment is maybe a lack of feel. His athleticism seems to be back after the back injury, but can he hold up defensively? Can he hold up as someone who shows good positioning defensively or even adequate there? And what he does offensively outside of getting his own shot?
Yeah, I think that's all right in terms of the on-floor concerns, right? So like just to kind of give you an example of what Michael Porter did while he was on the floor this year and how much of a chucker he was.
Oh yeah.
When Porter was on the floor this year, he took 42.8% of his team's shots. For reference, like people complained about Trae Young taking too many shots for Oklahoma all year. He took 34.2 percent of his team's shots while he was on the floor this year. Remarkable number to get up near like 43% for Michael Porter. I'm almost impressed with how many shots he got up in the limited amount of time that he played this year at Missouri. He really, really just should not have played basketball this year. He was not ready to come back, I don't think. But the thing with Porter is that NBA executives have enough of a sample of him from lower levels. He's been seeing it.
Yeah.
So many different recruiting events, so many different events around the country, you know, around international play with like FIBA Americas and everything like that. They have a pretty good feel for what his game is in general. He can be a three-level scorer. He can be a shooter. He can be someone who finishes above the rim. He's a really underrated offensive rebounder, I think, as well. Plays hard on the offensive side of the floor. Honestly, I'm not going to lie to you. I have no idea what he's going to look like defensively in the NBA. You know, like 18-year-olds playing AAU-level defense, playing even international-level defense when you play for Team USA. It just isn't that important because they're so much more talented than everyone else that they're going to play that, you know, like you like to see them try and you like to see them get down in the stance. Porter at least tried for the most part a lot of the time. But we just don't have a feel for what the level of his defensive instincts are at this stage. So I don't know what that's going to look like on that end. But as an offensive player, if everything checks out in terms of him being a good teammate and everything, if everything checks out in terms of him clearing the back injury and it not being a potential recurring thing going forward into his career, he has all the talent to be a 20-point-per-game scorer, to be an 8-rebound-a-game guy who can knock down threes, you know, who can maybe pass at some point. We'll see if that part comes along. I know that Jason Tatum last year didn't necessarily have the passing, and then this year for Boston had it. So I think it's kind of hard to tell sometimes when guys are put into situations like that. But in Porter's case, the talent is there for him to be a lead scorer. He just needs to have all of the development ticks kind of catch right now going forward.
You mentioned about the teammate issue. Is that a legitimate concern, the personality or compatibility problems with Porter?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you mean by legitimate. I think that teams will look at it. I think that for every team, it's going to be different. The stuff that I heard was just some entitlement stuff for him this year. And that's obviously not a situation that you want to have whenever you're entering a locker room of also very talented people. So he needs to, I think, either prove himself as a star immediately, which is possible given his talent level, or he needs to kind of take a step back. And it's also worth noting as well that Porter was not someone who you would really ever hear that about before this. He was someone who got Sterling marks as a kid and as a human being before his season at Missouri. So how much of it to take into account, who knows, but it's certainly an aspect that is out there.
He's an interesting fantasy guy just for the scoring upside, which can be really hard to find. But, you know, do the assists come? Do the defensive numbers come? Where's the efficiency? Is it, you know, mediocre on large volume? That can be a concern fantasy-wise as well. So that's something to bear in mind when you're considering him in dynasty-type drafts. Now, another guy, Sam, that you're really high on compared to other people is Colin Sexton, the Alabama guard, a guy who had to carry an extraordinarily large load last season, probably more than anybody outside of perhaps Trae Young. And that it probably had an impact on his overall efficiency. Something that I mentioned when talking about Trae with Cole earlier is that, you know, the lack of elite efficiency maybe is to do with the fact that he has to take so many hard shots and has to take so many bailout type shots. But we know his competitiveness is huge, but can he be able to transition into a lower usage role? Can he work as a spot up guy, or does he need to be that player who is dominating the ball as much as he did?
Well, the funny thing with Colin Sexton is that he chose to take on that high usage role more than like he needed to take it on. You look at this Alabama roster This is a team that has a potential first round pick in Herbert Jones, who started for the back half of their season, has a guy in John Petty that was like a five-star recruit coming in, potential NBA player down the road, Dante Hall, elite athlete, good rebounder, physical frame, good screen setter, potential like G League NBA player down the road, Dazon Ingram and Braxton Key, both of whom are very, very good college players, very high level starters, legit SEC level starters. Like, there wasn't really a reason for Colin to be as high usage and to dominate the ball as much as he did. I would say he got really tunnel vision-y. He was someone who just decided, okay, I'm taking this shot before he really even got the ball. Right. That stuff scares me a little bit. Now you talk about, you know, past recruiting events, you know, Hoop Summit, he showed the ability to get teammates involved whenever he was around super elite talent. Maybe that carries over. When you're talking about mentality, there's no more competitive player that I have seen in the years that I've been scouting the NBA draft, going on like 6 years now, something like that, than Colin Sexton. He is number one, no question, in my mind. That dude steps on the floor and wants to rip opponents' hearts out, just straight up. And that counts for something to me. There is no moment that he will be afraid of. There is no moment that he will fear as an NBA player. And when you're talking about rookie impact, that's something that I think can really come into play. I think it could really, really help him as a rookie player, just not worrying about anything to do with, if I screw this up, I'm coming off the floor. If I screw this up, you know, it's a significant problem. That's just not who he is. He's going to have it in his mind that he's the best player on the floor and he's going to go get it.
Now, some people may or may not be aware of this story, and you can enlighten us on it. There was, I vaguely remember the details, but wasn't there a time this season where he had to play on the court in a 4-on-5 situation for Alabama?
Oh, no, it was better than that. It was 3-on-5 because his teammates got, like, ejected, essentially, yep. And fouled out of a game against Minnesota. And they were losing pretty substantially. And Colin Sexton going 3-on-5 basically was playing 1-on-5 offensively. And they actually outscored Minnesota in the time that it was 3-on-5. It was like an 8 or 9 minute span. And they they didn't almost come back and win. I think it was like a 7-point game. But like they brought it back within like 3 at one point and made it like a really close game. And it was basically all on the back of Colin Sexton just deciding, you know, this is a moment. I'm going to live up to it. I am going to play up to it, and I'm going to destroy the opposing team. And he almost did it.
There is a prevalence of players in this draft with suffixes, juniors, the thirds. We're going to talk about someone who's a fourth, and that is Lonnie Walker, the fourth, mm-hmm. a guard out of Miami who's been getting quite a bit of buzz lately, really strong wingspan numbers. He's more of a 2 than a 1. I think that's fair to say. But do you think he can push up and guard threes? How's his defense going to look for wings, which is so important? Or is he, you know, profiling as a lead scorer type guard player?
Definitely not a 1. Definitely like a 2 guard that, you know, maybe you play him with another 2 guard on the floor and maybe his length allows him to guard up a little bit. But mostly you're talking about just a pure 2 guard who can really score the basketball. His shooting numbers this year, not elite by any stretch, 34%, if I remember correctly. But the mechanics look great. He took a ton of contested shots, took a ton of difficult shots this year that I think drug that percentage down to where, you know, these repeatable mechanics, the arc he gets under the ball, he's going to be a fine shooter once he gets to the NBA. It's also worth noting too that, you know, he suffered a knee injury in the summer before last season and didn't really get like an off season to really get back into the swing of things either. So I think you might be finally seeing like the real Lonnie Walker, unencumbered by a team, you know, with 2 selfish point guards in Jaquan Newton and Chris Likes, unencumbered by knee injuries and in a place where he's getting cleaner looks and open looks. And if that's the case and you buy into him being able to be that kind of player who can knock down open shots, attack closeouts, you know, really, really operate in spot up settings, I get using a lottery pick on him. I have him like right around number 14, number 15 on my board. The sample that he showed this year is a little bit scary to me, though, because it just wasn't great by any stretch.
You talk about his field goal percentage. Overall, his true shooting was 52.7, but I think some of that was influenced by the fact that he's, according to Synergy, the largest percentage play type he ran was pick and rolls, and he was only at 0.72 points per possession, which is really quite low. Isolation, he was at 1.03, which is, you know, quite a good number for isolation scoring, but him, the ball handling and passing and making those decisions, maybe that can be a concern. And in terms of his overall fantasy value, he doesn't translate well at all because he's not a guy that rebounds well. He doesn't get big assist numbers. Steals and block numbers are low. Efficiency, free throw shooting, none of this stuff is really high. He can score, but there's just so many other deficiencies in his game that even if he gets picked, say, 13th or 14th or 16th, I would doubt that he'd be the 14th or 16th guy that I would take in a dynasty type setting just because there are all these other deficiencies in his game. And then there's all the concerns about whether what he did and what we think he can become can actually occur. So there is a lot to, I guess, extrapolate there with him, and we seem a fair way off coming that way. Now, the next two guys...
Just for reference real quick, I want to give you a couple other numbers on Lonnie as a shooter, because I really do think he's going to be able to shoot it well from distance. Took 61 guarded catch and shoot shots this year, took 70 jump shots off the dribble, only took 21 unguarded catch and shoot shots. So you're talking about a situation where basically 130 out of the 150 shots that he took this year were either off the dribble or guarded. That's why the number's low. It's not because he's a bad shooter.
Yeah, and we look at your numbers in terms of what percentage of his shots were assisted. They're not high numbers. Only 70% of his three-pointers were assisted. A lot of the times you'll see guys in the 90s, 91, 92, and he's trying to create these own shots and not necessarily being in a spot, as you mentioned, that the selfish point guard play didn't really work to his advantage in terms of the shooting numbers, and that will likely be able to improve. Now, these next two guys, Sam, are two Kentucky players, and we've seen over the course of the last 3 to 4 years, the Kentucky players coming into the NBA, they always seem to surprise us with different things that we didn't get to see them do in college. Devin Booker, Jamal Murray, Bam Adebayo, Karl Anthony Towns as well. You know, adding things to their game. Towns shooting threes, which he didn't in college. Devin Booker and Jamal Murray playing ball handling roles, which they didn't do in college. Bam Adebayo showing passing ability that we didn't necessarily see from him in college. So you've already mentioned Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Is there something in his game that we didn't see during his time at Kentucky that could be on display for us in the NBA next season?
Yeah, I mean, he shot something like 40% from three this year, but it was on a low number of attempts. He took like 57 threes throughout the course of the year. I think he's going to shoot it at the next level. I really do. You look at his catch and shoot numbers. You look at his unguarded catch and shoot numbers. He's a guy who can knock down shots, but he had to control the ball a lot. He had to play as a point guard this year. The situation that I really like him in and why he's a top 10 guy on my board is because he's 6'6" with a 7-foot wingspan, I think you can play him as like an off-ball creator who can also knock down shots in spot-up situations whenever he's open. And then whenever guys close out on him heavy, he's going to be able to get into the lane. He has a very polished dribbling style, has a very polished handle, and he has great length extension finishing ability at the basket. And I think that that's really going to play up at the next level. Just that combination of skills whenever he's not relied upon necessarily to be the only guy creating stuff on the floor for Kentucky as a lead guard, which ultimately this year for Kentucky, he was just their best option and was often asked to do so. In Kevin Knox's case, he only, I think, shot again like 34% from three last year. He can shoot. Like, he shoots off the screens, he shoots contested shots, he can shoot a little bit off the dribble, has a nice floater game. I think he can shoot and score. And he is another guy with a 9-foot standing reach. He is a pure four at the next level. He was playing the two, he was playing the three this year. Like, that guy's going to slide down. And I think you might even see some of the athleticism play up whenever he's being guarded by bigger, slower guys than what he was asked to play against this year, because smaller guys in his case, I think, can give him a few more issues just because they can outquick him on the floor. And because he's not overly strong, he's not a guy who's going to be able to like bowl through them and get to the spot he's looking to get to. So I think that what you're looking at is you might see the athleticism play up a little more. You might see him shoot at a slightly higher clip. And remember, he's only 18 years old. He's one of the younger guys in this class. So he's someone that NBA teams continue to tell me might end up going just slightly higher than what you expect on draft night.
With all these Kentucky guys, I'm always willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. Like, I look at Knox and you go, ooh, that's a bad assist rate. That's a really bad steal rate. Like, there's no blocks there. Poor offensive rebounding rate. But I feel like something's going to change. Like, it just seems to happen with all these guys coming out that something is different. And as you mentioned, he's playing at the two at Kentucky, and he's not going to be doing that in the NBA. So he'll be close to the basket. His rebounding rate should improve. His block rate should improve. These other things will change with his game. So there is something there. The same with Shai, with his, he's already shown a good steal rate, but he can start to shoot the ball more. And I think both of these guys are really interesting, from what they can do. That there's still question marks in terms of what they're going to be able to produce at the NBA level. But giving that benefit of the doubt to Kentucky players is something that I think that we should be doing, especially guys who are taken in those, mid late lottery range. They can take those steps forward despite the way their initial projections come across, which isn't great, especially for a guy like Knox. His numbers don't translate fantastically with poor efficiency numbers and steals and blocks really low and bad assists and rebounds, but all that stuff can bump up. So they're guys that I do give somewhat of a benefit of the doubt for, just based on the past experience of these other guys who have come out of similar situations. Robert Williams from Texas A&M potentially could have come out last season, didn't, returned back. Would you say that his 2017-18 season was a marginal disappointment?
He didn't take a next step. You know what I mean? Like, he was basically the same guy, just a slightly more efficient version of the same guy who played in year one. The expectation was that he would be able to take that next step forward, average 16 points a game and 10 rebounds a game and block three shots a game. It just didn't happen. Mostly I think that's due to situation. He was often played with Tyler Davis or Tony Trocheck-Morelos, actually played like 40 possessions with both of them. All three of those guys are centers. So that's not a situation you want to be in, especially when you throw in the fact that DJ Hogue was a 6'9" guy who in college is best suited to play the four, playing the two and the three every single minute that he played this year, basically. Savion Flagg was a guy who got some minutes at the three and at the four, mostly just the three next to Williams. 31% from three. There was no floor spacing. There was no, they play a zone defense half the time. Like, just a total mess in terms of an evaluation setting for Robert Williams. In terms of his physical tools, 6'10", 7'5" wingspan, bouncy as all heck, can really get up and really be a pick and roll finisher. He has maybe more ceiling in that regard than any player in this draft. And again, obviously has shown the weak side shot blocking ability coming over from the corner in that zone. Did a little bit in man-to-man as well. I think he averaged like 2.5 blocks a game this year, was top 25 in the country in block rate. You know you're going to be able to get a good shot blocker with Robert Williams, but we have no idea how he defends on the perimeter, and we have to hope that the pick and roll ability comes along when we really just don't have an indication of it yet.
He's also not someone who's ever going to be stretching out to three. He's a horrendous free throw shooter, 47% this season. And the comparisons, of course, will be with DeAndre Jordan, the poor free throw percentage, the athleticism, the fact they went to the same college. Is that a reasonable, not projection necessarily, but a facsimile for what they can do? High rebounding, shot blocking, high percentage finisher who provides no spacing and can't shoot free throws?
Yeah, I mean, if everything goes right for Robert Williams, yeah. Like, DeAndre Jordan's a three-time All-NBA guy.
Yeah, that would be best-case scenario.
Yeah, if Robert Williams, really breaks right, yeah, maybe. I don't know if I see it, though, to be honest. Not sure that he's going to be this incredible force at the next level. He has some potential, I think. You know, maybe you're talking about down the road a starter in the NBA, but there are too many questions I think he still has to answer.
Let's go to a guy who apparently has received a draft promise, and that is Chandler Hutchison out of Boise State. Sam, you're big on Chandler here. So what's he offering NBA teams, and do you have any indication of which team may have given him that promise at the back end of the first round?
Yeah, I think that the promise stuff always is concerning to me, maybe, I would say.
I don't like it at all.
They happen a lot less frequently than what they're reported.
Okay.
I would say. That's not to say that he doesn't have one. He might, but, you know, we've now heard that, you know, just from my list here, you know, Chandler Hutchison has one. Kevin Herter has one. Who else have you heard? I'm trying to think off the top, like, you know.
There was a international guy I thought I'd heard one from, a weird one, and it's completely slipped my mind. Hutchison was the main one that stood out. There was someone, yeah, it was really strange that it, Kostas Antetokounmpo, I'd heard.
Yeah, that's another one that's out there.
Yeah.
Not like a crazy, honestly, like they happen a lot more in the second round than they do in the first round because they're enticements to stay in the draft normally. But like in Hutchison's case, Chandler Hutchison staying in the draft. He's a senior.
Yeah.
He is, you know, the idea here is that you stop a guy from working out and going to other teams if you promise him. Sure. I mean, it's not a situation I would want to put myself in if I was promising people, but whatever, do your thing, whatever you want to do. Hutchison, in terms of his game, 20 points per game, 8 rebounds, 3.5 assists. The turnover number is a little bit worrisome. He was tasked with a lot this year. Was, you know, really, really tasked with a lot of creation responsibilities this year. Probably a little bit more than what he is capable of, to be honest, in that regard. 36% three-point shooter. I think that's really the swing skill for him. If he's a good three-point shooter, if he's someone who can knock down spot ups from the corner and from above the break, the sky's the limit for him as a like starting quality NBA player, in my opinion. 6'7", 7-foot wingspan, great body control, explosive athlete, can finish with both hands above the rim. Great free throw rate. Kind of does everything that you're looking for from the modern NBA perspective, but you know, he really does need that jump shot. If he doesn't have the jump shot, you know, he's not like some crazy elite defender that can get by on that end.
There are things that I look at with his numbers that really, you know, make you stand up and take notice from a fantasy point of view. One of those is the assist rate, which is, you know, for a guy who's a wing, is pretty decent. 4.5 assists per 40 minutes last year. The steal rate, almost 2 per 40 minutes, which I talk about a lot. High steal rates. Yeah, often are things that translate to really solid players with some decent upside, and he's got that there. As you mentioned, on that high usage, the efficiency wasn't quite where it is, and that drops him down in terms of some of the initial fantasy projections, but that's likely to improve under different situations. He's got a strong rebounding rate as well, really good scoring numbers. He is a very interesting player, but I want to focus on the assist. Is that a real thing, that he can be that guy who maybe gets 4 assists per game on the wing, or is it a little bit overblown due to the team?
I just don't think he's going to have that responsibility at the next level. I don't think he's going to have that usage rate, but he is a good passer who can make plays for teammates on the move. You know, a guy closes out on him heavy. He can attack the closeout, hit that cross wing pass to an open three teammate. Like, he can do that stuff, but I don't think that you're talking about like a 4 assists per game guy, maybe more like 3 assists per game.
A guy like Chandler Parsons has had 4 assists per game seasons when he was in Houston as a wing guy, not necessarily known as a great, you know, creator necessarily, but he was able to do similar things to that. So maybe I'm just conflating them because of the same first name that they've got. But, you know, he was a guy that was able to do that, even though he put up, you know, mediocre assist numbers in college, only averaged 2.4 assists per game in his time at Florida, and was able to develop that as a skill that wasn't necessarily expected of Chandler Parsons. So if Hutchinson can keep that up, then his fantasy appeal really does, you know, rise, which I think will become higher than where he, say, is drafted in the actual NBA draft, especially if he can ease some of that offensive load and therefore increase the efficiency that goes along with that. And another guy that you're pretty big on, Sam, is Melvin Frazier. Why do you like him, say, so much more than the general draft consensus at the moment?
I love Melvin Frazier. Love that dude. 6'6", 6'7", 7'2" wingspan. I think he has like an 8'7", 8'8" standing reach. So you're talking about a guy who can play up and down the lineup from the 2 to the 4, is absolutely elite of the elite in terms of athleticism. Quick twitch, powerful, physical, like really just an elite on-ball defender in every way. Also really improved as a three-point shooter, 39% from distance this year. Got better as a free throw shooter every single year in college. Good passer, had 3 assists a night this year at Tulane. Again, you don't have to worry about the finishing, 62% two-point percentage. This guy can really just kind of bring it all. And you look at everything else that he does defensively, again, I think he is one of the best defensive prospects in this class, just straight up. Multi-positional, 2, 3, 4, can even defend some ones, as he showed against Shake Milton throughout the course of the year in their matchups against SMU. Just a beast of a potential role player, in my opinion. I'm not sure he has someone that has a ton of fantasy value necessarily, but he's someone that, you know, you could look up and see him playing like a Jordan Bell type role for a team next year.
His steal rate translates really nicely for fantasy, so that's a real positive there for him. And his ability in transition was fantastic last season, mm-hmm. as well. We had 1.3 points per possession on his transition opportunities. He was able to score off screens as well. But that steal rate is something that does give me really a decent level of appeal, as well as his ability to finish and get that field goal percentage at a pretty nice rate. A true shooting of 63% is obviously really strong. Poor free throw percentage, but his other numbers really good there. Combine the steals with rebounding, which could work to improve there, but that nice steal rate, okay block numbers, good efficiency. There is something there that makes me think that even in a limited role, he could be a guy that would produce more than the average player, even as a rookie, with upside to potentially at some point become a top 100 guy just because of that really strong steal rate and his ability, which is not something that's measured in a metric necessarily. But if you can stay on the court with these strengths to transition and the defense, then the other numbers just start to accumulate. So it's all well and good having great per minute numbers, but you've got to have something that keeps you on the court, and he's got that there, which would keep him in a pretty solid role. And we all know, Sam, how valuable wing players are and guys who can go out and guard multiple positions. And he's already got that ticked off. So that's something for him to get out there and be able to offer to NBA teams straight away. Now, the last player I want to talk to you about is a guy who was an interesting character last season. Probably should have entered the draft given the mystery surrounding him, and that's Hamidou Diallo. I think saying he struggled this season would be a fair assessment. You seem to have him at a decently high level on your mock draft, still going in the second round, but some people have him considered as even an undrafted player. Are we still looking at him based purely on upside potential at this spot?
Yeah, to be honest, yeah. he showed some flashes, I think, late in the year at Kentucky, where he started to really defend at a high level. You look at some of their tournament games, he made just a massive impact on that side of the floor. Why he didn't bring that all year? Gotta ask him that question. I don't know, to be honest, but he was a player that, two blocks against Davidson, three blocks against Davidson, 2 blocks against Buffalo, had steals in both of those games, just started to actually show the skill set that made him one of the top 10 recruits in the country during his recruiting class year. Can't shoot it, still has the hitch in the jump shot, doesn't really have much of a handle. definitely just like a transition guy with a 6 foot five height, 7 foot wingspan. And I'm willing to take a bet on that in some cases, kind of just working itself out in the second round. Because if a guy like him hits and he does improve as a shooter and he somehow, you know, doesn't just start dropping the ball as a ball handler, very, very valuable player, very, very valuable archetype and skill set. Little bit worried, though. A little bit worried, and that's why he's a second-round pick.
Yeah, a guy coming in with a college true shooting of under 50% is... It's a considerable concern. But as I said earlier, I'm all about giving a benefit of the doubt to Kentucky guys. He's got a lot to do now. I went through and I've done statistical translations for 164 different prospects coming into next season. Hamidou Diallo ranks as the 164th out of 164 players in terms of those translations. So that is, you cannot get any lower than that. It'd be complete speculation of, hey, let's see if all these things can go, but everything at this point is telling us it probably won't. But again, benefit of the doubt, extreme athleticism, played for Kentucky, maybe, or maybe he becomes Aaron Harrison. We'll see.
On my personal board, I have like 44, 45, something like that. Like, he's like a mid second round flyer to me. I'm not a huge, like, not super high on him to the point where I'm telling teams they got to take him. But if he hits, it's super valuable.
Yep, exactly. He's just a really interesting name to throw out there, especially given his combine numbers from last year when he was putting up those huge vertical leap numbers, and people were getting pretty excited. People were legitimately talking about him as maybe he's going to go in the top 20 if he stays in the draft last year, and it's been interesting to see him on the court this year. Sam, that was great. Thank you for devoting your time to this podcast for the third consecutive season in looking at this NBA draft. It was invaluable as always. Give us a plug of what you're doing over at the Athletic Fieldhouse and what people can be checking out over there.
Yeah, just covering the NBA draft right now, and then we'll get into free agency, and then I'll start doing NBA free agency stuff. So busy time of year coming up. The off season's the best time of year for people who like competitiveness within the NBA. So I am very excited to see that get going. Just follow me at Sam_Vicini. Go follow the Game Theory podcast over on whatever podcasting app you're listening to this to on. So thanks for having me on, Josh. It's always fun.
Yep, it was fantastic having you on again, Sam. Lots of information for everyone to devour out of this podcast, and of course the earlier podcast we did with Cole Zwicker, who can also be found on the Game Theory podcast with Sam. Sam, thank you again.
Of course, anytime.
All right, guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. DeAndre Ayton.